Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Statically Typed Languages. What was old is new again. Episode 188, Styling with Style.
Hey everyone, welcome to the React Native Radio Podcast, where we explore React Native together. I'm your host, Jamin Holmgren, and I'm joined today by two of my three astounding co-hosts. Harris couldn't make it, but we do have Robin and Aditi today. How's it going, Aditi?
Going very well. How are you, Jamin?
Going very well. The audience can't see this, but you don't have your pop filter in place right now. Apparently, there was an incident this weekend or something.
Yes. My daughter, she's a 3.5-year-old. She climbed the desk and unscrewed the pop filter, took it away, and I can't find the screws anymore. And she also climbed the refrigerator and fell from it. So it's been an interesting weekend.
She's survived the weekend, so did you. So that's the important thing. Yep. And Robin, how are you doing today? Your daughter didn't try to destroy your office, did she?
She did not try and destroy my office. She does routinely climb on the kitchen table, though.
I don't know who. It could have been one of my daughters, but someone cranked my volume all the way up last week. So on Friday, I was doing a meeting with the rest of the team for scheduling and turned on my mic and just blew everybody's ears out. So I had to go adjust everything on my mixing console here.
Kids just, they add a bit of entropy to our lives.
They do.
Yeah,
well, just kind of rolling the dice a little bit here. I'm excited about our topic today, but before we do that, I want to mention that this episode is sponsored by Infinite Red. Infinite Red is a premier React Native design and development agency located fully remote in the USA and Canada. With years of React Native experience since it was released and deep roots in the React Native community, we are the hosts of Chain React, which is the conference. And we also publish the React Native newsletter for over 12,000 subscribers. You can go check it out, by the way, reactnativenewsletter.com. Infinite Red is the best choice, in my humble opinion, for your next React Native app. Hit us up, infinite.red/React Native. Don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio Podcast. It makes all of this worth it. Appreciate it. Okay, let's get into our topic for today. Today, we are talking about styling with style, all about React Native styling. I'm kind of excited about this. I always enjoy these kind of roundtable discussions that we have. But styling is something I'm not very good at. I'll be the first to admit. I am really more of a back-end engineer in a front-end world when it comes to this stuff. I love things like state management and, you know, moving data around and all of that. When it comes to making something look pretty, I always feel like I'm just pretending like I know what I'm doing and hammering on the keyboard.
I have a bit of an opposite experience, actually, because I was a back-end engineer for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was terrible at front-end. I was like, oh, I'm not a front-end engineer. And then Jamin had me start learning React Native. And
I like how it's always my fault that this happened in your narrative. This is good.
It's always going to be your fault. And I discovered that I actually really enjoyed styling my apps. And I found it was immensely satisfying having the visual representation of the code I just wrote, or like the screen changes every time I make a change, and it was really satisfying. And I actually found that maybe I was a front-end engineer all along.
It's kind of my experience too. I started off doing like MFC, C++ front-end stuff, and I hated it. So I was like, I hate front-end. And then I got thrown into like a web project, and we used something like, I think like Knockout JS. And I was like, hey, mm-hmm. I like this. You know, I can do stuff and see the changes pretty quickly. And then jumped into React Native and started liking front-end for sure. I really like that, you know, whatever I do, I code, I see the changes in a second.
I think maybe I thought I wasn't a front-end engineer because I really hated CSS.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That's kind of a spoiler, a foreshadowing for what some of what we'll talk about today. But yeah. I really hated CSS, and in React Native, you're not using CSS. And I found that I was able to really enjoy a styling. So
yeah,
sorry, web engineers.
If it's okay, I'm going to go way back to the old days. Is that all right?
That's okay.
Insert audible groan here.
Jamin's off to the old days again. When I first got into professional coding, I obviously did coding in, you know, since I was 12, but the professional side of it really came in 2004. I built a website. I hadn't started my business yet. I started my business in 2005, but I built a website in 2004 for my church. Back in those days, I think it was already starting to change a little bit, but a lot of websites were still built using tables. They were laid out using tables. And so you would actually use a table element in HTML. You would use columns, and you could use things like call spans and row spans, I guess. And you could lay out your sections. Actually, I don't know if call spans and row spans were set up yet at that point. Anyway, doesn't matter. The big thing was that we were using tables, which are not built for that. They're built for data, mm-hmm. right? They're not built for, hey, put your navigation over here, and hey, put your the main body of your website here, and here's your header. But that's what I used it for. It was really simple. You just put your stuff where it's like laying it out using Excel. You could literally design your website using Excel.
Hey, don't knock on Excel. Excel could do a lot of stuff.
It can do a lot of stuff. It's absolutely amazing. So that's what I did. And if I wanted a different color, I used inline styles. So I would say font equals, you know, Comic Sans, which was, of course, my favorite. Neither of you laughed. You just accepted that as if it was...
It was so unsurprising.
Oh, come on. That's how bad I am.
To be fair, at the beginning, you said that, like, print end isn't your thing. You're not into styling, so clearly. I wouldn't put it past you.
I did know not to use Comic Sans. I did not know not to use Papyrus, and someone had to tell me.
Oh my gosh.
One. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Really, Papyrus?
I built a website using Papyrus. I will admit it. Anyway, I then learned about CSS and that you could make a style sheet and then you could put all of your styles in there. And then over the years, like, that's where all of the styles went. They went into styles.css, and that was like, you know, you'd have 1,000, 2,000 lines of CSS in one file, and you'd load it on every page. And that, of course, isn't the greatest, because how do you know when you can delete a rule? Like, you don't know where it's used. You don't know what's going on. And there were many other options, things that kind of came along, systems, one of which was Bootstrap. Did you folks use Bootstrap at any point?
I used Bootstrap. I used Bootstrap to build, like, my very first websites that I ever made while I was at boot camp. Bootstrap at boot camp. Yeah, we used Bootstrap for all of our stuff. I never built anything huge with it, so I never really understood a lot of the nitty-gritty, but I could make buttons mm-hmm. and rows. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've used Bootstrap too several years ago at my first job, and we then moved away and created our own UI component library within the company. Mm-hmm. But it was just a copy of Bootstrap for the most part.
I remember when Bootstrap came out, and it was just mind-blowing, because that was not possible before that I remember. There was just nothing as simple to use. Mm-hmm. And they made heavy use of CSS classes where you could just put in certain classes. But of course, over time, the demands of the web became even more with responsive, you know, building for responsive. I mean, I remember the very first time that I built a website, I just built it for 800 pixels because that fit every monitor that I could put it on. Fixed width, 800, you know, table width equals 800. If everything had just stayed on 15-inch CRTs, everything would be great now.
Those were the days.
Unfortunately, these are different days. And so we are now into a different era. Now, when I started mobile, on the native side, it was... I remember the first time it actually felt like a step backwards when I was building views in RubyMotion/Objective-C, because you would create a view, like you would subclass a view. You'd be like, hey, here's my, I don't know, my header view. Okay. And it would just be named header view. And in your kind of initialization method, you would actually just assign properties like set background color, UI color, blue color. I didn't say I was good at this stuff, but yeah, you'd actually just set properties directly like that. And it'd just be like one line after another. My background color is blue. My width is
800,
you know, 140 or 320. Actually, I think 320 points was actually hard coded a lot of times, because that was the only smartphone there was an iPhone, and it was 320 points. Points were different than pixels. With a Retina screen, it was like 2 pixels per point or something like that. And then it of course changed over time. And so there had to be new ways to manage that. Apple came out with auto layout. I think Android's layout system was actually superior for quite a while, where it was probably closer to what we have today. But Apple had auto layout, which had some kind of funky ASCII art ways to lay things out. It's a really strange system. Literally ASCII art. Like you would put like, you know, almost like markdown tables where you put like pipes and dashes and stars and things like that. It was really strange. There was also struts and springs, which you would mostly use in things like Interface Builder in Xcode, different ways to lay things out so that they kind of flex and move as you twist your phone or if you're on a different size phone. So all of these things were kind of the way that things were done in many different ways with Native. But React Native was different. So the old days were just all kinds of different things. React Native came in and there's one way to style. And that's with the CSS in JS, basically. So because this is the React Native Radio podcast, we're going to focus on that. We're going to focus on the CSS and JS that comes with React Native. This is, I mean, like Robin, you said, it's not really CSS. It's not really CSS, but it is based on
CSS. It's CSS. It's familiar. If you know CSS, especially Flexbox, it's familiar.
Yeah, it's very similar, but just syntactically different. It's the same concept. Yeah. It just looks different.
You could probably copy and paste CSS and then just modify it to fit the formatting. Mm-hmm. More or less.
Because a lot of that is camel case versus, you know, how CSS would be, where you have the hyphenated.
Right. So you have to change the naming conventions. And there are certain properties that aren't available. There are certain properties that work differently. Mm-hmm. For example, so Flexbox, obviously, I feel like most people would understand what Flexbox is in our audience. But just to reiterate, it's a new way of laying out web pages, actually. That's where it kind of came from. And allows you to do things like, okay, if I want 3 boxes, you know, left to right, but I want the left 2 boxes to fill up half the screen and the right box to fill up the other half. You could do 1, 1, 2, and it'll basically weight the size, the width of those boxes and fill in those spaces. It's a great way to do this sort of thing. It certainly works actually not too differently from how tables worked back in the day, although CSS Grid is probably a better analogy. They brought that to React Native, and so you're able to use all of those things. The flow direction is vertical rather than horizontal, though, because of the nature of where. And that's one key difference.
That's definitely a difference. And in React Native, the flex is basically defined as a number. You say flex 1, 2, 3, whatever. And in CSS, you'll notice that it's a string, I believe. So just subtle differences, but it's the same underlying concept that translates between CSS and React Native.
CSS with an asterisk.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. And obviously it has sort of special considerations for native specific styling and what the two native platforms are capable of. Like shadows are very, very different.
Shadows in particular, right? Like shadows in particular are strangely hard.
Especially on Android. They don't. Yeah. Android doesn't really have the concept of like a box shadow like you would you do on the web, where you can manually define the radius and the dimensions. You can only give elements an elevation property, and then Android sort of guesses what the shadow would look like from that elevation, which is interesting. It's a bit harder to designers hate it because they can't implement exactly what they may have designed because you don't have that much granular control.
Right.
But you do on iOS. But it's syntactically different than it would be in CSS.
How often do we use shadows, though? I don't use it too often. It's quite rare.
I would say I use shadows in pretty much all of the apps that we've built. It's pretty common if you have like a list of things and like your header has a little bit of a shadow because the list scrolls underneath it. Like info sort of overlays, our designers will usually put a bit of a shadow around the edge.
Yeah, it's just giving information to the user that this is something that gives them a mental model of where these views sit in the hierarchy and like what will slide under what. Especially list views are a big one because where does this slide? Does it slide over or does it slide under? If there's a shadow there, you can kind of tell.
Yeah.
With Flexbox, we can also do like, you know, layouts where we can do position you know, based on whether it's an absolute layout versus a relative? Are they going to be on top of each other?
I've noticed there's fewer position options in React Native than there is in CSS.
What do you mean by that?
So in CSS, you can have position, relative, fixed, absolute, sticky, static. There's a lot more mm-hmm. options. Whereas in React Native, I think it's just relative and absolute.
Yeah. And within that, you can tell where it can be placed, I guess, top or bottom.
Right. Yeah.
It gives you a little bit of an appreciation for what browsers have implemented under the hood, because a lot of this stuff has to be done kind of manually on mobile. We don't have the benefit of the browser's layout engine mm-hmm. working for us. Now, what we do have is a thing called Yoga, and this is an open source library from Facebook that is really what powers the Flexbox layout engine under the hood. It has bindings for Android and iOS, and it will take in Flexbox information and then lay out on the screen the elements in the order that you would expect them to be. And it's a really cool system. I don't know much about it, to be honest. I haven't ever worked on it. I haven't actually contributed to it or, you know, otherwise even looked at the code. But there is a website for it, yogalayout.com, I think it is. And if you just search yoga layout, you're not going to, like, you got to just go to yoga.
It's one of those really hard libraries to Google. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just go yogalayout.com.
And they have a cool playground too. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. when you want to mentally visualize something, you can use their model. I've used it several times to like just look at, you know, okay, how does it look? Because sometimes you just get confused between different flex properties, like align content versus align self versus align items.
Yeah.
So you can visualize them.
I still don't know the difference between align content and align items.
Think align items aligns items within that container.
I don't think I've ever used align content because align items always does what I need.
Uh-huh.
Does it have something to do with the text content rather than items?
Well, because text you align with text align.
It defines the distribution of lines along the cross axis. And this only has effect when items are wrapped into multiple lines using flex wrap. So you won't need it until you have like multiple lines of content.
Okay. Today I learned.
Yeah, these are kind of the types of things that we don't really think about generally. We just use the properties, and the people that make yoga, they have to they have to be thinking about all these different situations and having some way to deal mm-hmm. with them. And yoga was built in C++, so it can actually be used anywhere. It has a low number of dependencies. It's actually small. You would think that something like this would be big.
I didn't know that. I didn't know it was built in C++.
Yeah. And so I would assume you could probably use it in Windows, React Native Windows as well. I actually haven't checked to see what they use there. But this is the type of thing that's pretty cool and allows for a lot of power. It's very cool that they made that as kind of a separate module to allow other you know, there are other systems out there that use it. I believe that it is used in other open source libraries. Obviously, React Native is the biggest, though. When we're talking about React Native styling, there is StyleSheet, which comes from React Native. At Infinite Red, we don't really use StyleSheet. We've used pretty much just bare objects. And the reason is because we use TypeScript. And TypeScript, if we just type each individual rule, or not each individual rule, rather each kind of block of rules for a particular style, then we can actually get the benefit of autocomplete and TypeScript. So just to describe it to our users, we'll say const button style, and then because it's TypeScript, we'll add the type information, colon, I guess it wouldn't be button style. Let's say
it would be view style, image style, or text style.
Yes, exactly. So we would say like const header style equals, or colon view style equals, and then we would give an object with different properties, and we could autocomplete. So we can start typing in background and it'll autocomplete to background color. And then it also knows what types of properties you can give it. And that's very, very powerful. It looks a little funny, but it works quite well. When you're trying to find something, everything is autocompleted. You have type checking, and you can also spread those objects into each other. So that makes it so that it's much, much easier to kind of use it you can compose styles from it rather than, you know, inheritance or anything else like that.
I often use it to remember what the various options are for image resize mode mm-hmm. without having to go look at the docs.
Yeah.
So that's nice. And yeah, like Jamin said, we use it for composing styles a lot. especially if we have higher order components, which we use quite a lot. Like we'll have our own text component, which wraps the bare React Native text component. And almost every time we have a higher order component like that, we'll include a style prop, which you can use to override any styles that we define within the component. And so we'll use just simple JavaScript spreading to combine the two styles together, which is really useful.
Interesting. I use Stylesheet all the time on most of my projects. And sometimes I use styled components, which is kind of a third-party library, mm-hmm. which has CSS and JS. But Stylesheet works for the same... we don't get the benefits of TypeScript, as you were talking about, but you can still do all of the stuff with higher order components and all of that stuff with just the bare minimum style sheet that comes with React Native.
Yeah, I do think TypeScript was the primary reason that we
moved away
from style sheet.
Have you guys used styled components?
I haven't.
I've used it in a kind of side project, a little, you know, playing around with things. I've also used Emotion, which is another popular one. And some of these are, like Emotion, you can actually use more, from what I understand, you can use basically CSS. Like you can actually copy and paste CSS in and it'll translate it to the React Native styling system.
Can you talk a bit about what your experience has been like with style components and what you think the advantages are over just regular components with styles passed in?
Sure. On some projects, I've used styled components. The good news is you can share it between React and React Native. Like when we use a regular mm-hmm. style sheet with React Native, we don't have CSS. If you were to just have the similar styling as CSS and you want to share between React and React Native, I've noticed style components are useful because you literally copy paste. And it's also, it generates a unique class name for the styles. So you don't need to keep track of class names. That's kind of nice. It's also been like, easier if you have both React and React Native projects to maintain. And if you have like a CSS coder who's not comfortable with just the way things look in React Native with styling, they prefer the style components. So we've noticed that when we onboard somebody with an extensive CSS background, they just prefer style components.
So it's using more traditional CSS to style React Native components?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And you can also, it basically styles the components. You can do the, you know, based on props or a global theme. So it supports things like that as well.
I will throw out the opposite scenario, which is that React Native Web, if you're using React Native Web for your web project in order to share code with a React Native app, React Native Web lets you use React Native styles for your web components. So it's kind of the reverse.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, it's literally the reverse. You code React mm-hmm. Native views and texts components, right? For the web.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is true about styled components, but Emotion allows you to, for example, if you were to say background color, colon, and then because you're using a styled.view, I forget what it's called, but you're using the backticks, you know, to interpolate, you can actually pass in a function. And so this, what looks like kind of a string, is you can pass in a function that will actually take the props of the component it's in. So like when you use the string later, when you use the style later, you can actually use the props and say, okay, well, I'm going to style this based on the props. And so when you pass in the style, it's not just like a static string. You're actually getting something that's kind of a living thing that can respond to the props that were passed in to that particular view. But you're actually kind of like, you're actually building with styled.view in Emotion, you're actually building a view in a lot of ways.
You understand how all these various like style strategies work. What if you kind of want someone else to do a lot of your styling for you?
Then we just get a UI kit, which is, there are plenty of UI kits for React Native, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. There's things like UI Kitten, which mm-hmm. we've used quite a bit here at Infinite Red. There's React Native Paper, I think is another one.
React Native Elements.
Mm-hmm. I've used mm-hmm. React Native Elements. That's pretty cool.
I know with UI Kitten, it's a component library, meaning like it has buttons and forms and popovers and various sort of useful common components. And it also has a theming, I don't know what to call it, like theming structure, mm-hmm. which you basically wrap your app in, and you can do things like switch from light mode to dark mode. Mm. And it basically gives you a color palette to work with and sort of helps you theme your entire app.
I think this sounds very similar to what React Native Elements does too. They have their own components for like buttons and all sorts of stuff. And I think they recently added support for web as well. So they're truly cross-platform now.
That's cool. I found with React Native Elements that it has some really cool theming functions and stuff like that. So I think that's kind of its strength. It was a little lacking on the pre-built components where I think UIKitten is a little more full-featured on that mm-hmm. side of things.
Yeah, UIKitten has quite a lot.
Typically, I've used these UI toolkits for like prototypes and, you know, quick demos. I haven't really used it to build a product to ship to a client. I haven't done that yet.
Our designers will come up with a design system almost always for the designs that we do, for the mobile apps that we do. And I'm going to give a little shout out to our designers here. They really understand mobile. And one of the things that they really do well is not design us into a corner. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing because like Robin was saying, you know, with Android not supporting drop shadows the same way, et cetera. If a designer gets you in a position where you can't replicate it or you have to do a lot of really custom things to replicate it, it can really extend the expense of a project as well as the maintainability toward the end. They do a great job of that. And they also do a good job of designing kind of a design language around how you approach the app all the way through, which translates from their side. I remember with working with designers like way before I had my own design team. And they would sometimes, like, every page was totally custom. Like, they would just approach it like it was a blank slate. And you had to, like, completely redesign each page. And there were very few common elements. But with this is they'll come up with a design system that, you know, the buttons look the same. They may have a few properties different here and there, but you're using kind of the same buttons. You're kind of using the same colors all the way throughout the app. So you can use theming. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a better experience for the user anyway, because as they're looking at it, they can notice familiar concepts and no, that's a button. No, that's, you know, a tab or whatever. It works all the way through. I'm a big fan of that. It definitely tightens up our code and we can kind of use that to compose styles, to share styles all the way throughout the app.
Yeah, that consistency is really important to the users as well, because they want to have mm-hmm. that, you know, memory of what the button looks like, what it does. They don't want different components, different colors and themes. So
I would say going with a UI library, an all-in-one UI library like UIKitten or React Native Elements is a good thing to do if you're maybe not working with a world-class design team. Mm-hmm. Those libraries can sort of help nudge you in the direction of having really consistent elements throughout and a consistent look. And I would say if you're working with a design team and you're also planning on using one of those UI kits, make sure your design team is on board, because it can actually be quite difficult to try and implement a custom design while also trying to use pre-built UI elements.
I agree. That makes sense. You know, if you're just a developer, kind of silo, don't have a design team and asked to do, you know, all of it, then the UI kits are really useful at that point.
Definitely.
I want to talk about one more thing, and I'm actually, if it's okay, I'm going to use the time that we would normally spend on a weird bug. I'm going to, I don't think the three of us necessarily have a great weird bug for this week. So I'm going to use that time for something else styling related. And that's to talk about apps that allow you to lay things out visually and actually come up with code, like code that actually you can copy and paste into your app. Now, I don't know if you two have used any of these in the past or explored any of these in the past.
You can literally do that with the yoga playground that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. You can position your elements and design stuff and get the code for it.
You get React Native code? Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I actually haven't used that.
See, Jamin, I thought you were talking about Dreamweaver.
I did use Dreamweaver for years. I never used the visual thing. And most people, when they think Dreamweaver, they think the visual editor. Mm-hmm. But it was a pretty good code editor in its own right. It mostly got a bad rap because the visual editor was complete garbage. And I think people have tried to do this for years and years. Like, this is something that has always been like, well, if the designers could just lay it out and give us the code, then we wouldn't have to worry about that. We wouldn't have to do that. These are probably people like me who don't want to do it. They're just like, drop it in and then I can wire up all the data and be happy. But the promise has always been bigger mm-hmm. than the actual execution of it. But there are a few out there now that are starting to get there. So like FramerX.
I've never heard of FramerX. What's that, Jamin?
If you go to framer.com, it is, and this is they're not a sponsor. I'm just throwing it in there as an example of this. It is a prototyping tool. So you can actually, you know, do things. Now, I don't know how good their React Native support is. I know that they'll export to React, I'm pretty sure. But framer.com, and you check that out. There's another one by our good friends over at Geeky Ants. They built one called BuilderX. I guess the X theme is sort of out there. This one, it definitely supports React Native because they're one of the, you know, they're friends of ours, and they do React Native, they do React. And that allows you to design things and you can then, you know, copy and paste the React Native code. This is something that I remember Sankit giving me a demo of that at Chain React one time, and my mind was blown. Like, wow, that's really cool. And from what I understand, they do use it over there at Geeky Ants, although I think they do a lot of Flutter and whatnot as well. But for their React Native work, I'm pretty sure that they use this. And the idea is designers and developers on one app, you know, you kind of have that meeting of the minds. One of the problems with that is that like designers and developers have different priorities. So if you have a developer design a design tool, it's not going to feel right. And if you have a designer design a developer tool, it's not going to feel right. So getting that right is extremely difficult and actually been an elusive target, I think, to this point.
We've been using InVision for our prototypes from the designers, mm-hmm. and that gives us all the styling information, but it's in CSS, which is still okay.
Yeah.
We can still translate that to React Native pretty quickly. So that's been useful, like for shadows and all sorts of stuff.
We did an internal project, which I don't think I've ever talked about publicly to this point. We did an internal kind of R&D project where we could take a sketch file and translate it into React Native, basically. And it would become, you know, it was more or less a script using Glugun, which is the library that we built for CLIs. That's a tough problem. Like, we would have had to put a lot more investment into it than we did to make mm-hmm. it useful. Not only that, we actually found that the tough thing was getting any designers, didn't matter really how good they were, to use Sketch in such a way where it turned out good code. And I feel like that was something that it was an interesting idea that really, again, fell over in the execution. This is just something that I think we should definitely have touched on in this. That actually brings me to my last question for you two. What do you think is the future of styling in React Native?
Depends on how far in the future we're talking about.
45 years.
45 years. I definitely...
You'll be talking about the old days.
I definitely think styling it's bound to move towards visual-based layout, like being able to define what you want visually and have that translated into code. I think we'll get there.
Absolutely.
I think it's a hard problem, but I think we're moving towards the solution, and I think ultimately that will help bridge the gap between design and development.
Yeah, I don't see why not, you know, because we have so many technologies to do other things. Because I think like having like building blocks where we just like have the designers put pieces together and generating code for it, at least the styling code would be easy. That'll make developers' jobs super easy. So we just need to work on, you know, the actual functionality of that app at that point.
I agree. I think the problems are not technical. I think the problems are definitely more around getting designers to design in a developer-friendly way and getting developers to, you know, kind of adjust their ways. Because developers who are used to handcrafting code have certain expectations around what that code looks like, how it works. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get that if you get auto-generated code. So how do we do that? Now, like Xcode with Interface Builder, that's been a thing for quite a while, actually. But I actually don't know, like, how many designers out there use Interface Builder to design. Like, I doubt that's all that common, to be honest. So you're still relaying it out again. This is a tough part, really. You're translating from one team to another, and it's always lossy. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, I think that's a good place to end the episode. Thank you both for your insight into this. This is definitely something I'm interested in, but I'm just not very good at. It's still something that, you know, I guess you just have to do a lot, and I don't do it a lot. And there were some things that we didn't touch on. We didn't talk about how we account for different device dimensions, other strategies for organizing styles, co-located versus, actually, in a previous episode, we talked about co-located versus centrally located files. And that's the sort of thing that would be fun to go into, but we're out of time today. So I'm going to wrap up here. Where can people find you, Aditi?
I'm on Twitter at Aditi Ravi.
Perfect. And Robin?
I'm at Robin_Hines.
And I'm at Jamin Holmgren. You can find our show Twitter at ReactNativeRDIO. And as always, thanks to our producer and editor, Todd Wirth, our transcript and release coordinator, Jed Bartoski, and our social media coordinator, Missy Warren. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/react-native. Special thanks to all of you for listening to us today and hopefully every week. Make sure to subscribe and tell a friend if you have enjoyed this episode. And let us know how you like the episode and the show on Twitter. We enjoy hearing feedback, positive or negative. We'll learn from it all. See you all next time.